Hello, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Brumman.
And I'm Lara Chambaker.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a podcast from the Jackie Winter Group. We are a creator production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. So, our podcast is all about giving you a glimpse into our world as the bridge between clients and creatives, with a specific focus on creative project management and production. And yeah, this is our second episode, and today we're going to go, I guess, a bit more into what makes a good brief. But first, I just wanted to kind of say hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Any thoughts from our first episode, Lara, in retrospect that you want to discuss?
Weeks move very quickly. I can't believe that was a whole week ago.
Bianca, how's life in New York?
Life in New York is wonderful. I'm sunburnt. It is a hot start to the summer.
We are freezing here. I'm getting to the point where when I leave the house in the morning, it's about to have the little snowflake that pops up in my car when it gets below 5 degrees Celsius.
And I don't drive. What's that like?
It's really, really cold. So what else happened this week? Interesting week in our industry. Obviously, a lot of stuff going on at Cannes, at where most people have been. Campaignbrief.com, which is our kind of diary of what happens in the area, has been doing a lot of Cannes diaries. Anything else come onto your radars in your travels at all?
Well, Jeremy, you mentioned something about, I guess we use Slack in the office, and there's, you know, you Slacked me the other day. Should we be using something else?
Yeah, I mean, I am always on a never-ending search for the holy grail of web apps and things that can kind of tie our offices and make our processes a bit more kind of streamlined. And I guess, yeah, it's so interesting. I was thinking about this the other day, how real-time chat and just chat in general, like we kind of existed as a business before and during that time. It's been so interesting to see what's happening. It's kind of like when you think about also like life pre and post-internet. Like I think we all kind of grew up with the internet in a way. And so it's so interesting how Slack as tech is so retro in a way. It's almost like, yeah, everything's kind of going back to instant messaging or AIM and AOL, ICQ. Actually, yeah, we love talking about our old MSN handles. Can we dub Sheena in on her?
Oh, definitely dub Sheena in. She's not here.
I think it hurts to something like Sheen's Loves Blink 182. Yes.
Mine was Cool Cats with cats spelled K-A-T-Z.
What, like Dr. Katz, the Jewish therapist from Comedy Central?
Sure. Okay. Yes. That's what 11-year-old me was referencing.
I'm not even going to tell you what mine were because they were so embarrassing. Slack has definitely changed the way kind of everybody has worked, and especially us. I think it's made communication easier and harder at the same time. It's something I want to kind of come back to in more depth, especially how we work, how we deal with kind of focus, especially in our office and especially in our job as producers, which is such a reactive job. One of the things that we do for Creative Mornings, every time we send out registrations, we get back all these kind of out-of-office replies. And people do some really interesting things in terms of how to tackle their email overload. Like some people only do email on a certain day or during a certain kind of period of hours and et cetera. And I think our clients' expectations of us to be on always is interesting, to say the least, and definitely affects kind of, you know, how we deal with information coming our way. This is just a roundabout way talking about this new product I saw, which is from the Todoist family. They have an app called Todoist. The company's called Doist, and they've launched this thing called Twist. Everyone's trying to launch different apps that are kind of around the same concept of group chat. I think Microsoft's got something. HipChat's another big one by Atlassian. And yeah, this is really interesting because what it does is it's kind of like a hybrid of email and live chat where you have channels, but then all your channels have kind of threads, and it's like you can add to the threads constantly. I don't know. It's something really interesting. I kind of passed it around to you guys because you've always given me good feedback in this. And what struck you, Lara, when you looked at this?
I need to investigate it further, to be honest, to give like a real analysis and actually use it. But from what I read, the overview that you sent me, I couldn't distinguish it from email. Like, I mean, it didn't seem to be any more or less useful than email.
But I mean, do you agree that email is a horrible project management tool?
I think it works in some situations and it doesn't in others. It's the exact same thing about Slack, and it would be the exact same thing about Twist or any other. I don't think there's ever going to be any one service that covers every single instance of communication. That's just not the way communication works.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think with email, like, it's so platform dependent. Like, you know, when you're working in Gmail, for example, like, we run on Google Apps and everything is kind of threaded. A lot of our clients and a lot of people, if working at bigger businesses, have to work on Outlook and other enterprise software.
That's why they should all move to Gmail.
Gmail can also sponsor this show if they're interested. It's funny, a lot of people have kind of been saying that, well, speaking of Gmail, that Twist is very reminiscent of a Google product called Wave, which was a bit of a Google's kind of experiment of doing this strange multi-channel communication, and it died ages ago, and it was often ridiculed. But it's funny that, like, all these kind of things that didn't have the proper resources and tech to kind of pull off a while ago are now coming back in new guises. The one thing that I love about Slack is that it doesn't require any context. It's like the channel sets up the context. When you're sending an email and you have to send the subject and you have to send the introduction and then you have to kind of talk about
all
it.
All the niceties.
Exactly. And niceties and manners, you know, something we were talking about last week. And I think Slack has really changed that in terms of how we interact. But yeah, it's just kind of something that came up in our radar. B, do you have anything to add? Did you have a look at Twist at all? Or
yeah, I mean, I think that the idea of trying to, I think, you know, what Twist is trying to tackle is this distraction and constantly being on. I guess the work that we do is so reactive, trying to keep on top of very shallow discussion as it's happening over the day can be a little bit overwhelming, especially, you know, for me waking up in the morning. I find the one frustration I have with Slack is that there isn't a hierarchy of information. It can be kind of, you sort of have to read everything to find what is important, which I think, you know, email is perhaps better for capturing important things and, you know, actually broadcasting an important thing that needs to almost be like in writing, whereas, you know, Slack is more of a conversation. So yeah, I mean, we're relatively...
Slack is more like comparable to verbal conversation. Mm. Like, I think Slack should be used for something that I might wander over to Jeremy's desk and ask, you know, a quick spitfire question, but not something that's like, you know, I'm laying out here a process that we're going to be following for the weeks forward, blah, blah, blah. That should be something that's more documented.
Yeah. Jason Fried, I think it is, wrote kind of very critically of Slack without naming them on Medium, Single Versus Noise, the Basecamp blog. Yeah, kind of he wrote about how Slack was being in an all-day meeting, basically, and like his idea of kind of hell, which is kind of ironic because then Basecamp also kind of introduced a chat feature like within Basecamp 3. But yeah, there definitely is something there. I think that also, it's so tricky because these... like Slack could easily come out with a feature that replaces kind of Twist as well. And I think it's so dangerous, like launching kind of software now, because Slack is ingrained in kind of our life. Like I'm part of like 8 different Slack channels.
Yeah, imagine
now
trying to unravel us from our Slack stronghold now. Like I just can't imagine.
But yeah, but
there.
I look at things from like a client. That's why I look at things from our client's perspective and see like, okay, you know, especially when clients are resistant to use Basecamp and it's like, oh, well, oh no, this is actually going to make your life so much easier. But there is like kind of this friction in terms of adding something new to an already kind of established workflow, even if it is kind of making your job easier. So yeah, that's something I'm really interested in hearing or having more discussions kind of with our clients about in that regard. I realized that Slack could just come in and update their Threads feature in a way so you have an extra sidebar and just kill like what makes Twist really good.
But also I think just so much of it comes down to user etiquette rather than the app itself. Like there are things that we've implemented which maybe we've let slide, but have made Slack so much more efficient for us in terms of like having all the appropriate channels for those things, keeping things to those appropriate channels. And so much of it is just educating your team about how to use it properly so that it can be a useful thing.
Sorry, I was just like, while you were saying that, like I just was going to say how I can get this pun of maybe saying we were slacking off.
I was going to do that and then I thought you would just hate it. That's why I said let it slide and said we let it slack off.
One funny kind of term that I just heard for the first time this week is called Sherlocking, which is like which is a phrase that kind of became popular after this company I think invented this kind of search function, and then basically Apple like 6 months later, just invented Sherlock and basically completely shut that company down. Apparently, it happened to this company twice. I'll post the Urban Dictionary link on, which is a totally valid source, in our show notes. But yeah, it's like Slack could easily Sherlock twist in this regard. And they are kind of adding new features, things like, you know, the highlight feature, for example. You can kind of come back to things. But I think one of the most interesting things is how bots are being used in Slack. And I think how that could potentially be used more for project management and more for, I guess, just better communication is just something to keep an eye on. They're definitely kind of a leader in that regard. And I think it's, something that we're consistently keeping our eye on in terms of using tech to make better projects. Speaking of better projects, I guess the main thing that we did, we did speak a lot about Slack, but yeah, it's something that is a big part of our workflow. But even before we kind of get to Slack, it's really kind of about the briefing process in general. And I think that's something that we really want to touch upon today in terms of, you know, what makes a good brief. I mean, there's so much to kind of pick apart in this, but the reason that I think it's pressing for us is we've spent the last 6 to 8 months actually developing our own internal web app to help us take briefs, which we're really excited to start sharing with our clients now. But we had to ask ourselves a lot of questions kind of in that process of, what is a good brief? What information do we need? Because like the brief is the foundation of an entire project. And I think that a lot of time needs to be spent there to get things right. It's a pretty rich topic. So, I mean, you have a lot of thoughts on this. You had a lot to contribute. You worked with me setting this up. Where do we start?
I think we start at the start. I mean, a brief is, if I kind of think about our creative process and sort of how our clients engage with us, they get in touch. Sometimes it's one line in an email. Hey, I'm interested in getting an illustration. How much is it going to cost? Or sometimes it's a long email or a long phone call. But, I think the most valuable role that we play in the creative process is really at the start of the process, which is in actually trying to define a good brief so that our artists have all of the information that they need to make the most accurate decision that they can about, whether they're comfortable taking on a brief and whether they're able to deliver it within the time and budget. And I think we've all kind of seen briefs in many different stages. And sometimes we're being engaged in the process very early on when a client's just kind of initially exploring an idea. And other times they're coming to us with a fully resolved brief that is ready to go. So yeah, I think the first place that we start is in a conversation where we're trying to fact find and ask questions and really start to clarify what it is that the client actually wants.
So let's take a step back. Okay, if Bianca is defining a brief as, what a client actually wants, I mean, let's go even simpler. Like, what is a brief to you?
I mean, a brief is a blueprint for the project. It's a map. The brief inherently is the agency, this is assuming we're getting a brief from an ad agency, just using that as an example. It's the agency's interpretation of what the client wants for the money that they're paying, right? With their creative spin on it and how best to make that thing come to life and make that a reality. And that is, as you were saying, the foundation. It's the absolute basis of everything that follows. It's where we get all of our understanding for what are we trying to do and what do we want to get out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of also a good thing to keep in mind is that the brief is aspirational in that way. Like the brief is never kind of, this is what's going to happen. The brief is kind of the start of a conversation, really.
And yeah, that involves all
that is kind of potentially debatable, because typically when a brief comes to us, or it's either incomplete or it has things that are not possible. It's almost like what a client really kind of like, what their kind of wish list is in a way. What's also kind of interesting is that, the brief is trying to define, I mean, this is super broad, but a brief is solving a problem that sometimes we're not always kind of aware of. And like, usually that's another really interesting thing in terms of how early you're involving your creative partners in a brief discussion. So sometimes we get a brief like super, super early days, like before anything's even been sold into a client. And sometimes it comes super, super, super late. I mean, and it has to be done kind of tomorrow. Personally, I prefer when we're kind of brought in at the really early stages of things, because I like the thing that I love about production is being able to think creatively about how we're going to kind of solve something and being kind of part of it, where we're actually kind of adding a bit more value there. But I mean, do you guys have different preferences? When do you like to receive briefs?
I really don't mind. I mean, I don't mind receiving something at a later stage in the process if the people that are sending it to us are great creatives that have come up with a really strong idea, and I love being part of the execution process, not necessarily just part of the actual strategy. But, you know, so that's A-okay by me if it's a great idea.
So in some of the kind of things that we've, like, we've defined multiple sections when we're kind of looking for information, what do you think, B, is the most important thing to kind of know if clients had to focus on one thing?
Oh, it's tricky, because I think that what it is that we're actually delivering is incredibly important. But then that is always relative to when it needs to be delivered.
That's a funny thing, though. It's like we don't always know what they want or what a client wants. And I think sometimes that could be made pretty clear, like in terms of what is the thing that you actually want.
Well, I guess that's maybe what they're hoping to achieve.
Well, I mean, if you look at a standard ad agency model going from, I guess, coming from strategy to creative, like I don't know if like we're ever kind of really privy to the actual hard business goals, which is kind of, I think, a lot of discussion around kind of adding value and business like really kind of comes back to that. But it's really interesting in terms of we're not always kind of part of that, but the work that we're doing is expected to happen. And typically the people that are briefing us as well might not have that information either.
When I work with smaller design agencies, they give you in their brief all of the background about the business objectives.
Yes.
And yeah, you know, because it's the same people often talking with the client to figure out those objectives who are also coming up with the creative. So then when they brief you, they give you everything. Whereas in a bigger ad agency, those roles are split and really defined across each sort of person and stage of the process. So when we're dealing with that last stage before it gets handed from them to us, we only get those last bits of information.
That's why I think it's so important in our role to understand like how ad agencies work culturally in terms of what positions mean and how things kind of move, you know, from top to bottom. I think the more understanding you have of that, the better of a producer you're going to be. But I think, again, the same thing kind of goes on the other side. Like ad agencies are just huge beast with so many moving parts. It's kind of like any other bureaucracy in a way. And yeah, when you're working with a smaller business, it is much easier because you're having that direct conversation. So yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think another thing as well, when you talk about kind of what we want, this is where we get into file specs and things like that. I mean, there's so many times I can think about where we've been briefed for something that requires vector artwork at the end, but the artist that they pick is someone who's a textural, you know, it's all kind of texture that you actually can't replicate in vector. So this is another thing where I think if you're an art director or producer who is kind of briefing creatives, you need to really have a full understanding of the deliverables, because that's going to affect the artists or kind of talent that you're going to want to pick. Yeah, there's a lot that you can kind of say on this, but really outlining those specs is so important. And usually it comes down to a media buy as well. I mean, we just kind of had this situation come up with something else where the media buy had so many different kind of formats, and that would have affected kind of the initial brief at the beginning. And that affects the kind of artist that you're going to pick, because it has to satisfy certain technical requirements. So someone like me, who like I love the tech side of things, like that's always kind of what I start with. And I kind of almost like working backwards in that way. But I know, B, you're a bit more focused on the creative and love to kind of start with, you know, making sure the talent is right. How do you?
Well, I think for me, it's all about context, and especially when the more, I guess, complex the brief is and the more complex the project is, I kind of like to start with broad questions and, you know, asking whether it's the art buyer or the creative to kind of explain what they want in their own words and sort of speak broadly about what they're trying to achieve. And then kind of drill down the detail from there, because, you know, there's a lot of times where context is incredibly important. And if you sort of start by asking, oh, you know, what color is this going to be? And do you want it in vector or raster? You're going to miss the context of, well, what we're trying to achieve here is something that needs to be pushed out onto, you know, 100 different channels, and that immediately gives you more context than trying to ask very specific questions. So I kind of like to, yeah, start broadly and then drill down the detail from there.
In what format do you find works best? I mean, Lara, we have briefs come in, you know, people, you just pick up the phone, people start rattling off a brief, things come in over email, things come in person, each one has its own advantage. Where do you like to start?
It depends on the client. Everyone works differently, as you said. So I try to mirror whatever they prefer. You're going to get the best out of them if you're working in the way that they prefer. So it totally depends on the client, because it depends on what they send you, you know, and then you can assess what's the, you know, because sometimes there's only one or two things missing. You can shoot off a quick email and that's fine. You're good to go. Sometimes you really need to sit down with someone in person and flesh out what it is that they're wanting. I mean, either way, I want to make sure that before we start, or before I quote, I have a really comprehensive understanding of exactly what we're going to be delivering as much as possible. I have a real axe to grind when it comes to people saying they have an open brief. I think there are only two situations really where you should be saying you have an open brief. And I think the first is when you are genuinely comfortable with the artist taking things into their own hands and leading the creative. And the second and only other time is when you are totally okay with paying for all the additional time that it takes to work out what the creative should be when there isn't a formal brief in place. And I'm not sure if you agree with me. You're giving me some faces, yeah?
No, it's interesting. You talk about complete, you know, creative freedom. I'm just watching Twin Peaks, the latest episode last night, which kind of is a great example of what happens when you give somebody that. But also sometimes I also, with the second point, yeah, you can have all the money in the world, but it's just it can become such a frustrating process that...
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it still won't work.
Breaks people. I mean, I just think I've learned the hard way that most open briefs aren't actually open in either of those ways. You know, what usually ends up happening is that the person sort of says that they want the artist to take the lead, that they're not really sure what they want necessarily. But, you know, as soon as the artist does put forward stuff, all of their opinions on what they do and don't want to see start pouring out. And these are all things that should have and could have been included in the brief in the first place. These are the things that would have made up the brief had they sort of spent some time digging a bit deeper to figure out what they want. I mean, I get that sometimes you need to see something to figure out whether you like it or not, but I think you're driving a little bit without a map, you know, and then you're inevitably sort of salmon swimming upstream, and, you know, it could take one day or it could take 20 to get to your final destination. And I never feel comfortable committing to a flat fee or a set timings plan when there isn't any sort of understanding of where we're going.
I think, Lara, what you're getting to is really the core of what I kind of like to talking about a lot, is the difference between applied art and fine art. If you have an open brief, you are commissioning a piece of fine art where you are literally just asking someone to dig
Absolutely.
Out something. And I think, you know, applied art is all about commercial objective. And I think that's, yeah, it does take two. The beauty of the whole process is getting two or more really kind of smart people together, putting their heads together and coming up with the things that are going to make a great end result. You can have a brief open within limits, but it's kind of like an open relationship. Like, never, it never really works. There was a good article in the Times the other week, the New York Times Magazine. But anyway, it's like it doesn't work because there's not enough communication. And that's where reference is really important. That's the one thing that I think we need up front. Some advice that I'm always giving to artists is the best indication that you're doing well as an artist is when you get a brief and you look at the reference and it's all your work. That's great. So we, I mean, that's kind of a separate point, but yeah, we need kind of some direction, and style usually is the first thing that we kind of get. And it's the one thing that we can always peg back to in a field as well, where it's so hard to talk about objectively what you kind of need or direction you want to go. When you have visual reference or some kind of written reference or anything, then you can actually kind of can tie to that post and kind of figure out, you know, how you kind of get to that direction.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I know by any means don't mean that you need to have a brief that says the dot needs to be there and the house needs to be there and this part needs to be blue. And, you know, that is overly prescriptive. And sometimes we get those briefs because people need something turned around in a day, and that's fine. That's what you want if it needs to be turned around in a day. You know, there does need to be some understanding of this is what we're trying to achieve. This is the kind of style we like. This is how long we have to do it. And then a fantastically talented artist, like all of those on the Jackie Winter roster, can then take that and turn it into something wonderful.
And this is where you get into other kind of really interesting issues as well that I think we'll kind of come up to when we talk more about kind of usage, copyright, IP. But, you know, sketches are really help from the creative team as well. Like, that's always good. And that's
even again, like a tiny thumbnail that's just, you know, so naively drawn.
Stick figures.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's because that's the whole thing. You're trying to manifest things just out of your head. Like, it's crazy when you think about what the creative process is, and you need that kind of there. So that's, I mean, that can get a bit dicey when you're kind of trying to figure out, like, okay, when you're doing kind of more character related work in terms of, you know, who actually kind of came up with the idea. And we'll get into that topic a bit more when we talk about creating original creative content. But
yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think starting with the creative vision or the client's vision is incredibly important. And not to bring it back to my secret hobby of performing in musical theater, but I kind of
deliberately to bring it back to your secret
hobby. You know, I do think that physically being in the rehearsal space for me and kind of going through the process of bringing a director's vision to life taught me a lot about the importance of actually having a solid brief and clearly defined parameters in terms of helping to drive forward the creative process. You know, great directors I've worked with in theatre are good at helping you understand kind of like the world that they're trying to build for the story and for the characters to live in. And so that, you know, is context on, you know, where you are in the world, what the era is. And, you know, there's like some aesthetic direction there as well. But it kind of like, as a performer, you get into the rehearsal space and you've got this framework around you, and it's much quicker to kind of to make decisions in the rehearsal space of how a character might exist or how, you know, a scene might play out. Like, those creative choices are much easier to make when you understand the vision.
Yeah. I think theater is a great example, but I also think one of the biggest points that I can make in this issue, the biggest advice I would give any creative or artist, is to be a client yourself. And the more that you can be a client, the more that you'll understand how important the briefing process is and how you brief. And this is a funny thing, because this is kind of more like me saying, you know, do as I say, not as I do, because we've been a client in multiple situations recently. And sometimes I realize, like, oh my God, we are the worst clients, because sometimes when I try to write a brief, I was like, can't you just go in my brain and pick this out? Just do it. You're the professional. I think Arija, our producer, might have had a taste of that in the last few weeks with this podcast, even trying to figure out the brief for that. And I think
we owe her many presents.
we really do. But and that's what I think also makes a great creative partner, and in terms of being able to kind of step someone through how you kind of work and the information you need. That's why we've kind of come up with this, you know, with this web app at the moment to kind of help our clients through it. But even when we worked with architects on our new office, like, it was such an illuminating process of how they took our brief. But, you know, they also realized we were busy people that maybe have never done architecture before, and they kind of helped us work through it. They gave us a questionnaire, they kind of met with us, and they kind of held our hand a bit. So I kind of think, yeah, it's a very bespoke process. And that's kind of the lovely thing about our industry as well, that it is this kind of thing. You can't buy it off the shelf. Everything is kind of a custom when we do it. But the brief is the thing that starts that. Before we cap this off, we didn't hit upon, I think, the important element of the briefing process, which is the budget. In 99.999 cases, there's never enough budget to do kind of what you want. And I think that goes for, again, every creative project. You always kind of want more than what you can get. The brief is aspirational, as we said, to start with. And I think the budget is the one thing that actually kind of ties it down to earth. And that's where you can kind of start actually moving things. I have to say that in the thousands of briefs that we've done, I don't think we've ever got, well, actually, I can think of a handful of times we've gotten a brief with a budget that was too much money. And we said, like, actually, no, like, you don't have to spend that much, you know? And we have been honest about that. I think if we were in the business of, or if any creative is in the business of kind of taking advantage of people, they wouldn't be in business that long. Sometimes there's this dance where it's like, no, the person who names the price or fee first, like, is kind of the loser in that discussion. And look, there is some element of truth to that I won't kind of go into, but I think that we need the budget, because that's kind of how we work. I mean, what do you think about that, Laura?
I think many things about that. I couldn't agree more. I mean, people are so fearful of giving up their budget, as you said, worrying that we're just going to say, okay, yes, that's how much it costs, you know, that they're going to name a higher amount than what it's actually worth, which is absolutely never, ever, ever the case. Ever. Very rarely. You know, getting someone's budget means that we have an understanding of what we can work within, and our job as creative producers and problem solvers is to figure out, okay, maybe their aspirational brief isn't fully achievable within this budget, but here's what is. Here's an awesome solution that still touches on these points and still achieves XYZ, but is actually doable for whatever it is, 20K. And that's why it's so crucial for us to have that budget up front so that what the approaches that we're designing, that we're tailoring to you are actually applicable.
I think having an understanding of the budget is important, but I also at times think that the creatives that are perhaps coming up with a brief, it's sometimes helpful for our creative clients to have an understanding of how much things cost and how long things take to produce so that they're actually briefing something that's realistic. I think it is at times important to be aspirational about what could be achieved or what you could be doing with a project and then figure everything out from there.
I think that, yes, it is good to be aspirational. And this is where it comes back as well to understanding kind of what the process is like on the other side and how a client kind of goes to an ad agency and says, this is how much money we're going to spend this year on advertising and how that's kind of divvied up. I think it's really important as well to kind of understand how the media buying landscape is changing as well, to kind of understand how clients value certain things. I think this is another reason as well to have a great close relationship with a few different kind of vendors. I think this is, again, not to toot our own horns, what makes an agent client relationship so valuable is because the more you do work with someone, the more you get an idea of how to set those pricing expectations accordingly. But realistically as well, it's also just about when you have that information, I feel like early up front, like that really changes like all the factors there. It doesn't mean that you can't still be aspirational and you still can't do something great. It just might mean that you, again, to go back to the architecture analogy, you know, if you want kind of a beautiful hardwood finish, but your budget can't allow for that, a good architect should be able to kind of look at your needs in that regard and say, okay, well, you might be able to then use a veneer to get that and then put it over, you know, MDF or something.
Or we can cut out the second story and then you can have your hardwood finish.
Exactly. Yeah. Or it's like, I think that's what a really great producer does. It's like they kind of know all the kind of pieces at their disposal and how to kind of put them together. I always kind of say like there's a Venn diagram of creative, money, and kind of logistics or timing. So like what you're making, when you're kind of making it, and how much those things cost. And those are really the three things that make up a brief, essentially. A lot of food for thought there. I will post some more kind of articles and kind of thinking about the briefing process. But yeah, this isn't a kind of a conversation that has an end or a beginning. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from clients, from creatives. You know, what does make a good brief? What do you want to see more of? What do you want to see less of? What works? What doesn't? You can send us a note on Twitter at Jackie Winter, or you can just go to our show page at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz for more. So to round things off, we're trying to establish a new tradition here. Have you ever established a new tradition in your life in any way?
Do you know what? I actually, over the weekend, went to Rockaways Beach because my friend he came up with a new holiday called Nauticles, which is like a summer holiday for your friend family. So it's kind of in opposition to Christmas.
Wait, Nauticles?
Nauticles, yeah.
Can you spell that, please?
Nauticlease.
Well, I think that's a bit of a double-edged introduction, because not only is that an interesting example of a new tradition, but it's probably also the most New York thing I've heard this week, which is what we're trying to round off, the most New York and most Melbourne thing that happened this week. So, B, you've satisfied your requirement. We don't have anything really amazing that's happened in Melbourne. So apart from me going to the Belgrave Lantern Parade and being really into Domino's pizza that you can order from your phone, and they actually start cooking it from your phone.
Jeremy secretly works for Domino's.
They know where you're at and they start cooking it like as you're kind of driving. I think it's amazing. But our special projects and folio manager, Melissa Van Dartel, Mel, also has a quite eventful life with things going on with her side hustle of flipping things on Gumtree. And her latest thing is
dolphin tables. Yeah, it's a real thing. She bought a table where it's like a glass top and the base is a sort of white dolphin sort of flipping through the air. And she tried to resell it. But
this is the thing, though, that makes it so interesting. Is that because so the glass represents
a dolphin table?
No, but the glass represents like the water, and so the top of the dolphin head sits on top, and then the body is the base. But it also looks like the dolphin is being decapitated.
It's
horrifying. It's kind of like my thing is the dogs in airports that have the little hole in their head that you put money in. I think it's equally disturbing as that.
This is far more disturbing.
Yes,
this whole dolphin's head has been chopped off.
It's
but people are bidding over this thing like crazy, and she's realized what a gold mine dolphin tables are, and now she's driving all over Victoria buying more.
I think her future at Jackie Winter is in question because she might be a millionaire.
We've got to get into the dolphin table hustle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap. Thank you, Bianca.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Bianca.
Thank you, Mel, and thank you, Mel's sacrificial dolphin. Go! This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areej Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Jackie Winter, one word, that's Jackie with a Y, and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at our podcast page at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Jackie Winter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details are on our website, jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye-bye. And so she holds a friend.